Hi, this is Susie Larson, and thank you so much for listening to Live the Promise today. Our website is filled with even more powerful and encouraging interviews. Learn more by logging on to myfaithradio.com. So much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise. Glad to have you listening today. Hey, and if you just tuned in, you missed my first hour conversation with Jane Rubietta. We talked about a very important topic that pretty much applies to all of us. Worry less so you can live more. We talked about ways to navigate those very real worries and concerns so we can delight in God, enjoy the joy of the Lord. Let that be our strength. And if you struggle with worry, you got to check out the podcast, myfaithradio.com. It'll be up in just a little bit. Well, now we're going to switch gears and talk to Bill and Pam Farrell. They come on every month to talk about family relationships, marriage relationships. Today, we're going to tackle something we've not tackled before with them. And this is it. And this happens so often in marriage. And I think even some marriages, many marriages probably break up over this issue. And it's something that you can remedy, something that doesn't have to happen. And here it is. It's running parallel lives, where you're running parallel tracks in marriage. You started out loving each other. You even love God. But you both get so busy in your everyday life that you're not connecting with each other. You're not connecting deeply with the Lord. And suddenly, before you know it, your paths are taking you farther and farther away from each other, and you don't identify with each other anymore. One day you wake up and think, how'd this happen? What happened? Well, Bill and Pam and I are going to talk about that, explore it. If you have a testimony of that kind of a thing happening, I would love to hear your story. If you're right in the middle of it, we'd love to stand with you. If you've gotten on the other side of it, we'd love to know what you learned. And the phone lines are open. We've got some Farrell resources on our bookshelf that we'd love to get to, Marriage and Family Resources, 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. And I don't think we've even had anybody call from our WPEO Peoria audience yet. So the first person, whenever you call from that audience, we're going to put a gift pack together, some fun resources, because it would be so fun to hear from you. It's a toll-free call, 877-933-2484. So let me tell you about my second hour guests, and we'll get them on the show. Bill and Pam Farrell are authors, speakers, and co-founders and co-directors of LoveWise, an organization to help people connect love and wisdom and bring practical insights to their personal relationships. They've written more than 30 books. They've been married more than 30 years, and they've raised three young men who love Jesus and athletics. You can find them on the web at lovewise.com or their influencer page on our website, which is myfaithradio.com. Bill and Pam, welcome back to the program.
Hey, Susie.
Hey.
Hey, Susie. It's good to be, always good to be the male representative on your show.
And you do such a fine job, Bill, I'll just tell you. So, you know the drill. We love to start out talking scripture, and I know you come armed with a passage every time. Is there a verse that you've been thinking about these days you can share with us?
I really like this 1 John 3:18 verse. Let us not love with words or speech, but with actions and with truth. You know, it's nice to say nice things, but even better to live them out in your marriage.
Excellent. Bill?
And because of the topic we're going to discuss, I came with the Colossians 3:14. Beyond all these things, put on love, which is the perfect bond of unity. And that really is the goal of marriage, is we want people to find a unity with one another that they thoroughly enjoy and makes them better together than they are separately. But sadly, a lot of people miss out on that reality.
Well, let's address this issue of running parallel paths. Can you think of a time in your own marriage, maybe, where you found yourselves just running, racing, doing really, really good things, but not connecting the way that you know you should or need to?
There's a couple of times. I'll hit the first one, and we'll let Bill jump in with the second one. But the first one that I can remember is we were actually newlyweds with big, lofty goals. And we really wanted to finish both of our educations because we married at 20 and get Bill into grad school because he really felt called to be a pastor. And so I was working more than full-time in a demanding position And Bill was going to school like double time, twice as many units as a normal person would take because he's brilliant.
Because I'm abnormal.
that just makes us super, super busy. And what we discovered is even though we got married because we love to spend time with each other, we were having less and less time with each other. And we were very devoted to ministry during that time, too. So we each were discipling. I was discipling teenage girls. Bill was discipling teenage guys. Our lives seemed to cross when we co-taught Sunday school and we co-taught Wednesday night. But it was very easy to not have any downtime together. And so that was the first time I remember having like a little bit of a struggle. I was making more money than Bill, and that kind of came into the issue, too, because I thought, well, I'm earning it. I can be spending it. So definitely, you know, I had my own agenda on my track, and it reared its ugly head because of that. So even early on in a marriage, we can see that happen. In our book, The First 5 Years of Marriage, we cite the study that more than 25% of all marriages don't even make it through year five.
Wow.
This is probably why. Is you're goal-oriented, you're moving, you know, a gazillion miles an hour trying to establish a life, but then you forget, oh, we wanted to establish our life together.
Wow. Well, before we move on to that other time in your life, I'd love for either one of you to speak to this, but what were some of the symptoms that you were running parallel paths before you sort of realized you were running parallel paths?
Well, that's a great question, Susie.
I think one of the symptoms was just we would each have our own agenda and realize there were conflicts in scheduling. Like, what do you mean you scheduled that? What do you mean you scheduled this? Like, I scheduled that, but we weren't talking to each other. So that was one of the first symptoms.
And I also noticed that, like, what got my attention during that time is I saw in Pam kind of this new, I don't want to call it an attitude, but that's the way it came across to me.
It was pretty close to an attitude.
I don't need to check with Bill on things because I'm making more money than he is. And that got my attention because I was like, but this is not like us. Like, we didn't get married to treat each other that way. And this is different. Like marriage is never easy and life always has its challenges, but this was different because rather than facing it together, there started to be this sense of we're doing different things and we don't need to really connect on things anymore.
I think that's so key because independence is one of the things that comes out of the parallel path, isn't it?
Very much independent. It kind of, once we realized what was going on, there was a little bit of a joke, like, we always went into marriage with, you know, it's our money. But then I realized Bill's money was our money and my money was my money. And that really wasn't very fair,
how
right?
How nice for you, Pammy.
Yeah. And so that was a symptom, too, is, you know, that independent attitude showing up in different areas, whether it was, like, having our own agendas for our own ministries and not really connecting them in together. The benefit is we were in leadership in youth ministry. And so the parents, the kids, just the church ministry demanded that we work really well together. And so that actually was a safeguard to our marriage in those early years is we never wanted to go into a meeting angry at each other. So if we found that our parallel tracks were pulling us apart, we would stop, push pause, pray, regroup, and then go into the meeting. And so ministry can be a plus or a minus on this whole parallel track thing, but for us it was a plus.
Now the other symptom that I saw, Susie, in me is I had a kind of underlying resentment building against Pam and this money thing. And the way it played out in my head was, you know, when I was making more money, it was our money. Now that she's making more money, it's her money. And rather than responding to that in compassion or realizing, you know, we're in a struggle here, and of course Pam's struggling with this because this is a whole new role for us. Instead, I had this sense of resentment building that I had to be honest about. Because if I allowed that resentment to keep building, then it turns into even more distance between people.
And oftentimes that's what happens. Those parallel tracks start pulling you apart, and you start blaming one another for the tension that is there. And the thing about blame is when you're blaming your mate, that means you're not looking at your own stuff. Mm-hmm. You're distracted from your own stuff. And so blame actually pulls you even further apart. And it goes all the way back to the garden, you know. The fall of mankind happened. They ate the fruit. And God said, where are you, Adam? And Adam's like, yeah, we're hiding over here. And, well, why did you eat the fruit? Well, it was that woman that you gave me. And then Eve's like, well, yeah, but it was Satan that tempted me. And even Satan, like, he tries to blame God. Yeah, it was the stupid plan you came up with, God.
Yeah. Well, you know,
so blame doesn't get you anywhere.
Well, blame, you know, as you say, it's focusing on the other off of yourself, but it's also focusing off of unity. And I would guess, as I've just thought about this, researched it, and written about it, too, that I feel like unity is probably the opposite of independence in marriage. You know what I mean? As far as independence is what happens when it's like, I'm either building a wall against you, I'm either just making my own plans without you, where the unity that bonded the Holy Spirit between the two of us and the Lord is what's necessary. So I want to know, like, for that first season of your life, did you guys just sort of evolve back together and reconnected as the roles and the workloads shifted? Or did you kind of stop in your tracks and say, hey, we need a reset here. How do we do this? Bill, what about you?
Well, what I want to say to your question is that every couple goes through this because it's part of the world in which we live. Like, if you look at the fall that Pam just referred to, like, the first thing that Satan did was separated Adam and Eve. And so there's a whole system in our world, and it's now part of the whole experience of life, that life tries to separate us and have us be individuals rather than be a couple. And so every couple goes through this, and if you don't fight against it, it will happen to every relationship.
And we were very proactive. And one day we were just like, we are independent rather than being interdependent, and God wants us to be interdependent and have that unity. So we did identify it.
And what we have found is that if you want to keep spontaneity and you want to keep unity in your relationship, you have to become pretty deliberate about your life. And so when we realized that we were kind of starting to develop a parallel life, we got our calendars out and we put dates on the calendar and said, we're going to get back to being a couple, and we're going to go out and have fun together, and we're going to share some meals together, and we're going to laugh together, and we're going to be a couple. And
then we set up
a business meeting with each other every week and said, okay, we're running busy right now, and we're like, we're deciding for each other how the other person should be living, so we're going to start getting together and have a business meeting and talk through our schedule and talk through our finances and deal with the issues between us. And we're going to do it as deliberately as we possibly can so that this thing doesn't take on a life of its own.
That is so wise, because you're coming back together, not only because there are parts of our marriage and our family that we do need to administrate. There are decisions that need to be made. But you sure can see, if you don't do the dating thing, if you don't stop and play and make time for that, and all you're doing is administrating, you suddenly become roommates, business partners, and it doesn't take long for the love to die. And do you want to add anything to that, Pam?
Well, there are a few things that we had decided early in our marriage that safeguarded us during that time, and that is, you know, we prayed together every night and every morning. That was just a habit that we had layered in. And every time after we say grace, we always kiss each other. So we had these romantic rituals built in. And as we look back now on that very busy season, those small things added up in a big way over time. Those small things kept us connected. And there have been seasons in our marriage, and this was one of them, when we made a purposeful choice to, like, share a car rather than have two independent cars, because that forced us to communicate more. And it's not always a viable option in many people's lives, but it's something to look at is, you know, maybe we're just like acting like two singles under the same roof. Are there other ways we can share that are kind of creative that will bring us back to more shared time? One of our friends that have been happily married for almost 60 years now, they worked in the same area of town. It was a long commute, and they commuted together an hour each direction. And they say that was one of the best things for their marriage. So rather than one taking the train and one, you know, leaving an hour later, they just decided, you know what, let's, you know, all of us, we'll just ride together. Even if that means we have to adjust our schedules, let's do that. And they got very close. And so sometimes let's just look at the logistics in your relationship, and maybe there's a tweak or an adjustment that will give you a little more time together.
Excellent. Talking to Bill and Pam Farrell today about running parallel paths in marriage, the impact of it, and how to remedy it. And some of those reasons may be busyness, career, children, maybe a selfish, misplaced ambition. Love to hear from you. Love for you to chime into the conversation. What have you learned about tweaking your life, your lifestyle, so that you and your spouse are not running parallel paths? Love to hear from you. 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH, or email me, Susie@myfaithradio.com. Don't go away. We'll be right back. So glad you tuned in today. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise, talking to Bill and Pam Farrell today about marriage, specifically about what happens when we get so busy we're running parallel paths. And what happens when we do that is we lose connection with each other. We become independent of each other, make decisions independent of each other. We even argue and have our fights independent. So the goal is no longer to restore unity. It's to win the debate. And so we're going to just explore some of the things that happen and how we can remedy those things. And I mentioned before the break, you guys, that busyness, career, children, misplaced ambition, those are some of the things that I think are real catalysts to this parallel path. Do you want to speak to those, or is there maybe another one you're even thinking about?
Busyness kind of leads us to number two, reason, the second time we really found ourselves living parallel lives, and that is when we were like in the crush of midlife and all of the mountain of responsibility, you know, three teenagers, they're all three sport athletes, and Bill is building a church, literally, you know, having designed it, and it's being hammered up, and he was a senior pastor, and we're writing, and we're speaking in almost every weekend, and then taking red eyes to get back into the pulpit for Bill.
Oh, my.
And we're in charge of, like, stuff in the community, and it was just like, whoa!
We were starting to think our lives were really, really important, which is one of the things that leads this parallel living, is we start to think our lives are more important than our spouses.
Yeah, your life cannot be more important than you love.
Mm. And often do we think, too, what we produce is more important than the vow and the marriage, the sustenance of marriage. You know, we can go there because we're such a results-driven culture, you know?
Oh, yeah. And over time, the production in our lives becomes very rewarding. You know, as you begin to realize you're talented and you have something to offer and people are complimenting you on the things that you're doing and you're getting rewarded financially for what you're doing, like, that's a strong allure. And when you go home, you know, by that time in our life, we've been married almost 20 years. And it's easy to look at each other and go, oh, yeah, I know her. I know what she's going to say. I know what she's going to do. And we can get bored with each other because we're no longer investing in the relationship and we're no longer growing together. And while we've gone stagnant in our marriage, our career is growing and it's becoming interesting and it's becoming exciting. And we're getting a lot of feedback on that side. And so it becomes a lot more attractive to us if we're not careful than our relationship. And if we put the same kind of investment into our relationship on a regular basis so it was always growing, it would stay as attractive to us as our career gets.
And the careers can come and go, but it's something that what we're building in marriage, when we do invest in it, it really does echo into eternity. I mean, it really does, doesn't it, Pam?
And as we look back, it's almost foolishness. If you think about it, you know, Bill and I are marriage experts. And so if we would have allowed that busyness to keep pulling us apart, if we would not have said, whoa, wait a minute, you know, danger, something's going on here, let's address it. If we wouldn't have spotted it early, we'd lose the very thing that we were trying to build, you know, marriage ministry and the church and everything. And so it's really painful to see so many high-profile pastors and Christian leaders who just lost their way, where building a church became more important than building their marriage or building their family. And then the result is they have none of it, life in ashes, broken pieces. And that's just sad.
And to your point, Susie, we just did the wedding for our youngest son. So all three of our sons are married now. Mm. None of my sons have ever come to me and said, Dad, I just want to thank you so much for being a pastor, and I want to thank you for working hard. But every one of them has thanked me for loving their mom.
Yep.
So that they have an example to build their marriages on. And I've got three grandkids, and they're not impressed at all that I'm an author, teacher, or a pastor. But they take great comfort in the fact that they know I love their Nana.
Indeed. And that's what I want to make sure, in case I get an email when I say echo into eternity, I don't mean that we're married in eternity, but
right.
But every act prompted by our faith echoes into eternity. You make a vow before God and you love that person rather than chasing. I think even ministry becomes an idol. And, you know, if we are getting accolades for that and we're chasing that at the expense of our marriages.
Mm-hmm. Right. And pride can build in. Again, you know, Satan in the garden, he's like, you know what, Eve, you have a better plan than God does. Like that don't eat from the tree thing. Yeah, he says that your eyes will be opened and you'll be as smart as God. So, hey, don't you want that? And so it just builds into our pride. And a lot of times that's what happens when you're living parallel lives. You're getting lots of encouragement and accolades and, like, applause outside of your marriage. So you let your heart drift there, and you become proud and arrogant, thinking, I'm better than, I've outgrown my spouse, they're an anchor to me. And any of those kind of thoughts are huge flashing red and yellow lights that something's not right in your marriage.
I'm seeing kind of a pattern here that is very insightful to me. Just it's kind of one of those light bulb moments. We just have a couple minutes before we take our hard break here. But, you know, you're talking about those first 5 years, and then you're talking about, you know, 20 years in. And that was the same for us. That wasn't 20 years in, probably more 15 years in. But I would imagine in the beginning, we're striving to prove ourselves. And so the temptation is to run those parallel paths. But then suddenly when you get a little bit of freedom, your kids are a little bit older, and you can prove yourselves. That would seem like, because I hear often, you guys, that marriages end at that next season as well. It's like, this is my one chance to do better than the guy I married, and I've grown tired of you, so I'm going to try for something else. Do you see that if you step back with all the marriages you've worked with, those two kind of landmark places in marriage?
We do. We see those as the two highest bell curves for divorce.
Wow.
Is that first 5 years and then that midlife crisis. And the midlife crisis can hit anywhere between your kids still being at home, junior high school, but your careers are in full force. Or sometimes it's delayed a bit until you get the kids out of the house, and then you're virtual strangers because you've been running on parallel tracks for so long, and then you're just like, I'm done. I'm out of here. I'm bored with this. So it can hit anywhere in a 10-year window, that second one.
And at that midlife phase, everybody does a pretty serious evaluation of their life, and if you don't like the answers you come up with, it's really easy to blame your marriage for the answers that you see.
Wow.
And we see people do it all the time. They don't like where their life is at, so they blame the person that they love and they've built their life with, and they use that as an excuse to then depart and go do something else.
Well, we need to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about temptations that surface in those lonely times. Because when you're running parallel paths, usually one spouse catches it before the other, and loneliness happens. And in the loneliness, temptations happen. We're going to unpack seven temptations, what the temptation is, and then what the call is. If you want to chime in, you can feel free. 877-93-FAITH. Don't go away. More with the Farrells in a moment. For us. Isn't that good news? God is for you. He never rolls his eyes at you, breathes a heavy sigh because of you. He loves you. He's committed to you. and he's committed to your marriage. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise. Talking to Bill and Pam Farrell today. They come on every month to talk different aspects of marriage and family relationships. Today we're talking about the unique topic of running parallel lives. What happens in marriage when we both get so busy that we're running parallel paths and we're not connecting with each other, not connecting deeply with the Lord? There's an independence that forms. And as Pam was saying before the break, what happens in that independence forms is when we fight and have conflict, the goal is to blame each other and to win the argument versus restoring unity. And what I'd set up before, and I want to just talk a little bit more now, is these temptations. Now, we've been drawing from previous to this, from the Farrell's book, A Couple's Journey with God, and a few others. This stuff here that I'm about to talk about comes from my book, Alone in Marriage. And I just asked Bill and Pam to speak to it because I think that they're just a wealth of wisdom. Something I've noticed, this is for women. And so I'm going to just kind of give you the seven temptations that I've identified. I want Pam to speak to them. And then Bill would love for you just to give a man's perspective if men's temptations are different than this. So you're in a parallel path kind of season where you're really not tending to each other anymore. I've noticed for women, one of the temptations is to serve yourself. You're thinking, well, his absence is my license. If you're going to be gone, I'm going to do this. And you indulge in ways, almost as payback, it's my right, so there. Now, that's the temptation. The call is to treat yourself, but to do it with wisdom and not for the wrong motive. So maybe get a pedicure if you need to. Go out with friends and have a nice lunch. The temptation is to indulge yourself and serve yourself because you're mad and you're paying him back. What say you, Pam?
Oh, I agree. Oftentimes, let's say our husband's in a demanding career and we're home with little kids. You know, we've chosen that. Or maybe we work from home and his life looks more exciting. So we can get the good girls want to just have fun attitude. Mm-hmm. So that if he's going to go out for lunch, then we're going to do one better. We're going to go out, you know, with the girlfriends, and then we might drift and start drinking, and then that will get us into some trouble down the road, you know. So it is the wisdom part that you mentioned that's so important. Pedicure with a friend, totally safe. Lunch with a mentor, totally safe. Out with your single girlfriends, dangerous. So just think through. Yes, we're both busy. Yes, we should renew and restore and revive and rejuvenate, but let's do it with wisdom.
What do you say, Bill? Thank you for that, Pam.
From the guy's point of view, I would just say ditto. That guys who, like when guys decide I'm not going to get any attention from my wife, they will just decide to get attention somewhere else. And it might be in a fast car, it might be in a golf course, it might be in pornography, it might be down at the pub with the guys, it might be working out extra at the gym. They'll pick something to do for themselves just to make themselves feel like they're important.
Oh, appreciate that so much. Okay, temptation two is to build a wall to protect from hurt, to say, you're not going to hurt me anymore, so I'm going to build this wall. Well, the call that I've learned is to be tough and tender. Sometimes we as women need to get a little bit thicker skin, but to do so with a tender heart so that our hearts stay open to when the season rolls around again, where we can reconnect. What do you say, Pam?
We always reward ourselves with light at the end of the tunnel. So, yes, sometimes life is demanding and you buck up and you put on your big girl boots and you do what life requires you to carry. But don't let that build into resentment, like you did this to me, you did this to us, because that will build a wall. But if you, like, both pick up life and carry it forward, then reward yourself together at the end of that demanding season. That's going to draw you closer.
Excellent.
And oftentimes we are tempted to build up a wall and just say, okay, I'm just going to have to handle life myself. I mean, obviously it's all on my shoulders, a little bit of a martyr attitude going on. And if you catch that martyr attitude in yourself as a woman, that's not the way God designed you. God designed you as a helpmeet, not a martyr. And he hasn't called us to that in marriage. He might call each one of us to be a martyr for the kingdom, you know, to stand up for our faith, but don't slay yourself and say, I'm the only one here that's doing any with anything. That will build a wall.
Another thing real quick before Bill gets to this topic as well is just to keep a light on in our hearts, so to speak, that, you know, let's say the husband's off in a selfish hobby or he's a workaholic. Somehow we got to nurture our hearts to keep a light on so that when it comes back around, the wall's not so high that when his heart is tender, ours has gone hard. But what do you say, Bill?
Well, I would say guys are more prone to just giving up, that they will see the wall going up and they'll try to break through in two or three different ways. And when they conclude that they can't break through the wall, they'll just go, well, see, I can't work with her. She's not going to respond. And so then we'll just go get busy doing the things we enjoy.
Because you want to succeed. And if you feel like you're going to fail at this. Well, Bill, this question I think might be for you. It's a male listener who emailed, and it kind of is along the lines of what you just said. He said, unfortunately, my marriage, 4 years in October, fell into the trap of living parallel lives, which has caused us to separate. Through this, I've realized how I failed my wife as a husband and have done everything I can to become a better husband in person during the last 9 months we've been separated. But she seems to be struggling to forgive me. I've forgiven her for her role and turned our marriage over to God. We're meeting tomorrow night to discuss how we're going to move forward, and I'm praying she's ready to work on her marriage. I pray for other marriages not to fall into the same trap. Thanks for the show, and God bless. Any advice for Mike? Because I know if she's struggling to forgive, and if he is just maybe pushing hard, our walls can tend to go up, too. So that's a tricky one, but I love that he's pursuing her. What do you say?
I would say to him, first of all, way to go. Like, the place that he's at is just a really good place. And if I could get all men to go there, it would be an awesome thing. Second, I would tell him, listen more than you talk. Because what he's just said is that her heart needs to turn back towards him. And as guys, we have a tendency to say, I know what needs to happen here. She needs to forgive me. She needs to turn her heart, so I'm just going to tell her. And when we do that, it discourages the very thing we're hoping to have happen, because turning of the heart is God's business.
Wow.
And so as men, we need to go in and listen, and we need to be curious, and we need to trust that if we wait on God, God has the ability to turn her heart. And once her heart turns, anything's possible. But if you push too fast and too hard, it has a tendency to just shut down the process, and now God has to start from the beginning all over again.
In fact, we tell newlyweds in the first 5 years, be tough on yourself and tender on your spouse. Mm-hmm. And what that means is oftentimes we want to switch that around. So if somebody in marriage, you know, offends us or they don't live up to our expectations, we want to just ride them and poke at them and nag them and demand from them, but that doesn't accomplish the goals that we really want, that unity, that closeness. Mm. Instead, we should be tender on them. Tell me what's happening, you know, what's your suggestions for drawing our hearts back together? Is there anything that I can do on my side of the equation? And then be tough on ourselves. You know what? They did point out something that is something I could do something about with God's help. That is an area of growth that I need to handle with God's help.
That's excellent. I want to just thank Mike for that email because I just appreciate your heart and that you're pursuing your wife. And we'll be praying for you for that meeting tomorrow night. Excellent. So we're going through these temptations that surface when we're feeling lonely in marriage, because that's sort of the byproduct of running parallel paths, where we get so busy doing our stuff, or maybe our spouse gets so busy doing their stuff, loneliness happens. And I just identified these seven temptations. I wrote about them in Alone in Marriage, and I'm asking Bill and Pam just to tackle them from their perspective. Temptation number three that I've noticed in women, when you're feeling maybe neglected or alone in marriage, is to look good for other men, to kind of get their attention. You think it's harmless enough. The call here is to take care of yourself, exercise for the right reasons, put a comb through your hair, because the other extreme, which I've heard from women, is they quit caring. They wear sweats all the time and ponytails all the time and just let themselves go because their husbands aren't noticing them anyway. But I want to address this one, looking good for other men. Strike a balance for us on this one, if you would, Pam.
We do want to look good, but it's because we want to represent Jesus well. And that really needs to be where our heart stays, is, God, how can I dress? How can I take care of my body? How can I be a good steward of this temple that you have given to me so I can live long and strong for you? If we catch our heart drifting over when we're shopping to what outfit can I wear that would turn heads at that dinner party, and that you're not thinking it's your husband's head that's going to be turning, then you're on dangerous ground. But rather, if you walk into a store and say, Lord, what is it that if I put it on, I would be the best representative of you at this event, then you're in a safe place.
What do you say, Bill?
Oh, and Bill, he thinks.
Well, from a guy's perspective, again, guys like to look good also, and so we will start looking forward to going to work where we know we look good to other people. And we will start looking more forward to going to work than going home. And that's where we fall into the danger zone.
Excellent. Okay, here's temptation number four, is to create a different reality. In fact, it's like escaping the current reality. Women have told me about fantasy novels, chat rooms online. I even had a number of women tell me, godly women, who said they fantasized about their husband's death, saying they assured me, I'm not thinking about killing him, but I've had dreams of him dying so I could be out of this because it's so painful to feel so alone. But they create a different reality in their mind and think that it's safe because it's in their mind. What do you say? And then the call here, I say, is to guard your heart.
Right. Oftentimes we do want to, let's create a safe space because this world right here is too painful. And so we spend all kinds of time in soft porn as women, which would be all those romance novels, and our husband will never match up to that kind of a guy. Even if romance novelist puts together a romance novel, she looks at the best traits of every man who's ever walked the face of this earth and puts them in one guy. Mm-hmm. Like, no man, not even your wonderful husband, Susie, not my Bill. Nobody would match up to that. And so it's important for us to say, okay, what's the reality here? How can I make my reality more happily ever after rather than escape from this reality? How can I bring some of those happy moments, those happy memories into my current reality?
Excellent. What do you say, Bill?
I would say that every man I've ever met is desperately hoping that his marriage is filled with passion on a regular basis. And it drives his life. And if the relationship goes, like, stale, if there's not interest, if there's not even the hope that there's going to be interest, it is a daily battle for him to figure out, how am I going to get my sexual needs met when my wife's not available and she's not interested and she's not approachable? And in the worst case scenarios, men start to get sexually addicted because they don't know how to get the need met at home. In more like kind of calm ways, they might drift off into pornography, or they might drift off into reading material that's inappropriate.
Or TV.
And in the best case scenario, they take their frustration home and use it as motivation to connect with their wives and break through the distance that's been created.
So for that wife to create a different reality, to say, this loneliness that I feel, I mean, really, she's called to do what you just said that the husband would do in the best case scenario, go to her husband and work it out, versus if she goes and gets a different reality, it sort of disarms some of that angst that she feels temporarily, but it takes away and diminishes her passion for her husband, and suddenly the contrast is so stark, he's no longer appealing. So it's actually very destructive, isn't it?
It is. And that's actually one of the reasons why I wrote Red Hot Romance Tips for Women. It's like a 26-day challenge focus to be a more desirable, more loving wife. And for 26 days, you think about how to make your current reality with your husband wonderful. And it kind of shifts back. What is God's best for our marriage? What is God's best for my man? What is God's best for us as a couple and our future? So if you're starting to feel like your heart is drifting to other men, to other places, to fantasy rather than reality to get your needs met, then pick up a book, you know, like 52 Ways to Wow or Red Hot Romance for Wives, or Sharon James has a wonderful book, Praying for Your Husband from Head to Toe. And when you start praying for your man and you start looking for ways to encourage him, your heart goes towards him. That's the way God designed. What we think about, our heart goes towards.
Yes, what we think about, our heart goes towards. Talking to Bill and Pam Farrell today. When we come back, we'll work through the other three temptations. We're talking about these seven temptations that surface when we run parallel paths long enough in marriage that we feel lonely. And these temptations surface, but really as we identify them, we can just look at them as information and redirect our affections so that that enemy doesn't lead us astray to make choices that would be destructive to our marriages. And we're going to wrap up the show today just to give you some practical advice to get back on track so you're traveling on the same road together. There's power in our oneness in marriage. Don't go away. More with Bill and Pam Farrell in a moment.
Set our eyes on you, devastate us with your.
Just had to let that song play out. I'm telling you, if you're running parallel paths, stop tonight. Download that song from Christy Knuckles, Captivate Us, and let it be your prayer. Lord, recapture our hearts for each other, for you, because you know what? His will for you is your best case scenario. And today we're talking marriage and how to put safeguards in your marriage. This just happens, and as Bill and Pam Farrell said, happens most often, this running parallel paths in marriage, in those first 5 years, and then when you hit midlife. In the first 5 years, you're trying to be all you can be. When you hit midlife, you feel like this is your chance to rethink it, to go after it, to maybe try a different life. It's just devastating, some of the choices we make out of that place. So we're talking about parallel paths. And right now we're going through seven temptations that surface in when one of the spouses is especially feeling lonely in marriage. That temptation one was to serve yourself, thinking, well, your absence is my license. If you're doing that, I'm doing this. Where the call is to treat yourself, but do it with wisdom. That's another temptation. Number two is build a wall to protect from hurt, where the call is to keep the light on in your heart and be tough and tender. And then temptation number three is to look good for other men, speaking to women here, where you're feeling neglected by your spouse. The temptation is to doll yourself up so you turn other heads. And that's dangerous, where the call is take care of yourself and exercise for the right reasons, as Pam says, as a representative of Christ Jesus. And then number four is creating a different reality, where if you don't like your current reality, the temptation is to get on a chat room or to read racy novels or, you know, engage in things that are sort of an escape to your current reality. Dangerous. Now, the fifth one is to neglect your husband. It's sort of returning the favor, so to speak. Well, to say, if he's not going to pay attention to me, I'm not paying attention to him. Where the call here is to love him and serve him even when he doesn't deserve it. Because why? Because it's what Christ has done for you. Pam, talk about that one. That one steps on toes, but it is biblical.
It is. That's why I laughed, is because, like, if you say it out loud, it sounds outrageously not wise. Mm-hmm. I mean, because he's being mean, I'm going to be mean. If he's being a jerk, I'm going to be a jerk too. Like, who wants that goal in life, to be a jerk? I'm like, that's just craziness. So somebody has to step up and say, you know what, love starts with me.
Amen.
And so that protects your heart. When you say love starts with me, you're going to become a more loving person, not just a more loving wife, but just an overall more loving person. So that means all your relationships are going to benefit. Your friendships, your relationship with your kids, your grandkids, in the community, in the church. It's just going to spill out of your life. Love is going to spill out like, you know, coffee spills out of a cup, because you're going to have so much of it. And some of that's going to spill out towards your mate, and it will get their attention. It might take a little time, but it will start changing the atmosphere in a relationship.
And Pam, on the flip side too, if you decide to hate your mate and to nurture thoughts of I'm neglecting him, he's neglecting me, that also doesn't stay in one place. That spills out in your other relationships too, doesn't it?
It does. In fact, right before I got on your show, I tweeted a statistic from CBS News that says that unforgiveness actually kills us. That 61% of cancer patients have an unforgiving heart towards somebody. So it, like, that bitterness makes us sick in the soul and the body.
Wow. Well, Belle, would you speak to that?
And I would just quickly say men will do the same thing, but a man's version of it is he just starts telling his wife she needs to be simpler, that she's being complicated, she's overworking everything, and if she was just simpler, this thing would work. Hmm. And that's their out from having to put more effort into it. It's just demand that she be more like a male.
Oh, wow. Excellent. You've written about that, I know. Okay, temptation six. It sounds a little bit like temptation number four about creating a different reality, but it is different. It's have a wild thought life. And this is for maybe the very prim and proper Christian who would never spend time on chat rooms or reading racy novels, but right in her little old head, she's having thoughts about the pastor or the speaker or the neighbor. And her thought life is going places, and she's thinking, what is the harm? I'm not acting out on it. And the call here is to renew your mind. But speak to that one, if you would, Pam.
You know, it was really funny when Bill was a pastor. If I would say something that happened in our marriage that was put him as anything less than perfect, there were women in our congregations who was like, you can't say that about the pastor. I mean, like he's Jesus or something. He's wonderful. He's great, but he's not perfect. And sometimes I think that all of us women fall into the grass is greener on the other side of the fence. You know, so I'm married to a pastor, but maybe my thoughts start, well, what it would be like to be married to a successful businessman. Or maybe I'm married to a successful businessman, and I'm like, oh, it would be really nice to be married to maybe a counselor who would be more sensitive. Or I'm married to a counselor, but wouldn't it be really nice to be married to, like, a golf pro, because then we could travel and have fun, and I wouldn't have to hear about everybody's problems all the time. We just do that, you know, grass is greener on the other side of the fence, and it does us no good at all when we compare.
Good word. What do you say, Bill?
And guys just dream about having an exciting lover in their life. So guys all the time say, yeah, my wife's a great mom. She's great at keeping the house. She's a great, like, life partner, but. And what we fantasize about is having a woman in our life that's just the exciting love partner. When in our hearts, we really want our wives to be that for us. But since we don't think it's going to happen, then we start fantasizing about other women being that person.
Okay, very good. Last one, temptation number 7, and we're almost on run out of time here, but living in the shallows. And I just, from interviewing lots of women, this is something I learned, that it's just too much work to hang on to faith. We're in that place of loneliness in marriage. Really, there's an invitation to find something in the Lord that you can't even get from your husband, but the temptation is to loosen your hold on the things of God and let that current take you to the shallows where you become shallow yourself. And the call here is to send your roots down deep in the Lord. It really is an opportunity to find something in God that you've not otherwise experienced. What do you say, Pam?
Oh, I think that's the key to success at anything, is to go deep with God. Because as we go deep with God, He is going to meet whatever need. Because Jesus says, I am the bread of life. I am the living water. I am the way and the truth and life. Whatever we need in life, Jesus says, I am the answer to that need. And so that includes in our marriage, too. If He knows, God knows what's going on in your life. If you're feeling lonely, I am the answer to that loneliness. Spend time with me. If you are feeling frustrated because you're poor, I am able to provide all your needs according to my riches in Christ Jesus, etc. And so as we dig down into the Word, God is going to give us what we need as a person and for our marriage. The key that will unlock love is held in God's hand.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. What do you say, Bill? Oops, did he step away?
Men are very similar in that people think shallow waters are safe. And so it takes courage to have a true loving relationship and to be intimate with your spouse and intimate with God. But people think the shallow waters feel safer, so they tend to go there.
Wow. You know what, you two, we could actually do a whole show on that, couldn't we? I think we could.
Yeah.
This has been just powerful, and I feel kind of like we just scratched the surface on it, but hopefully gave our listeners enough just encouragement to pull back from the shallows, to pull back from some of these licenses that they may feel, to shore up their life and to get a fresh vision for your marriage. As we wrap up, Bill, wondering if you would just pray for those who are listening today who know this is where they've been at, they've been running parallel, and it's time to hit the brakes and reconnect with their spouse.
Father, we want to thank you so much for the idea of marriage. Thank you for putting it in our hearts to want to be connected to you and connected to a significant person in life. And so, Lord, would you give us the courage to walk with you, and would you give us the courage to believe that you can break through any of the obstacles that are taking us to a parallel living. So, Lord, I pray that your grace would be strong in our lives, and for anybody that's listening who is on that parallel track, Lord, would you turn their hearts towards one another, and would you miraculously give them a renewed love for one another, and may 3 generations from now talk about how good you are and what you're doing in marriages today. In Jesus' name.
Amen. Appreciate you both so much. And to check out the Farrells, you can find them on the web at lovewise.com. Thanks so much for your time today, you two.
Thank you. Hey, tell everybody your book again. Susie is awesome.
Oh, the Alone in Marriage?
Yes.
Yes. And yours, the one we've been drawing from today, is A Couple's Journey with God. So bless you both. Thank you so much.
Love you.
Love you too. You've been listening to Live the Promise. I'm Susie Larson. In just a little bit, you'll find a podcast of today's program up on our website, myfaithradio.com. If someone's listening today and you're a woman and you're alone in marriage, I've got one copy. If you want to email me, put alone in marriage in the subject line. Leave me your address and I'll get a copy out to you in the mail. So glad you tuned in. Remember this, the Lord wants you to last long and finish strong. He is the one who'll keep you strong to the end. Have a blessed day and we'll meet you back here next time.